Okay, here we are back with hour number three. Welcome aboard. Glad you're on deck because we have a lot of information. Things are happening in the Ukraine war rapidly. I just sent a note to Russell this evening and try and get Russell to come on here in the next week or so. There is a lot of, apparently a lot of unhappiness about the, we know the Russians made a lot of mistakes early. There's a lot of unhappiness now about slogging it out at Bakhmut, for example. And now there are supposedly 30,000 Uk troops gathered around Zaporizhia, where the nuclear power plant is, the biggest nuclear power plant in all of Europe, for that matter. What are those 30,000 going to do? Well, they're going to attack Zaporizhia, the area, obviously. The Russians are slogging it out, the meat grinder. We've seen that. We understand it. The Wagner Group is, according to Porozhenko, or whatever his name is, the head of the group, they are the glue, the cement. What is it?
Prigozhin.
They are the cement that is holding the line at all the points of conquest around Bakhmut. There's one road left. And the Wagner Group is it. Now, Prigozhin is complaining that they're not getting the amount of ammunition they need from the Russian army. Is that a true story, or is that disinformation on the part of the Western media masters who are advising the Ukrainians? It could be a complete canard. I don't know. But he did say that on video, so they're not getting the amount of weapon support by ammunition that they want. I don't know. Anyhow, it's looking confused. I will go back to what I said originally. I am not a military strategist by any means, but it seems to me that the only way to win this war is to start playing on a much bigger table. And that is, for example, give 48 hours notice to all the civilians in Kiev, Odessa, and perhaps Kharkov, or any of those. And in 48 hours, those cities will cease to exist. Plenty of warning for everyone to get out, and that's the end of it. That would be one way to approach it. Now, people say, well, you do that, and they're going to nuke Moscow. Not the same thing. You're not going to give Moscow 48 hours. Not going to happen. So anyway, I think there has to be some major tactical shift, or this is going to be just an ongoing grinder for, I don't know for how long. Mitchell, welcome back. Thanks.
Glad to be here. And I'm ready to address that very question, okay?
Very good.
The question of tactics and strategy. Okay, so in the beginning, up until last month, okay, Russia was involved in the special military operation. So their primary objective at that time was capturing and consolidating the territorial gains in the four provinces that voted to join Russia. Okay, that was their goal. Okay, but now they've gone on to the offensive. It may not seem so, but you have to think about what is the purpose of an army? What is the primary objective of any army? The primary objective is to destroy the enemy's army, okay? It's not to gain ground. It's not to take control of places. The primary goal is to destroy the enemy's army, okay? So why not just rush in and take Bakhmut? First, it is not in itself of any strategic value outside of being a well-dug-in obstacle. Right. Second, the battle waging now is destroying the Ukrainian army. Okay, I got some good figures here. Okay, as of March 4th, 2023, Ukraine has lost 110,000 soldiers killed in action in Bakhmut.
Just in Bakhmut?
Over the past 4 months. Just in Bakhmut.
Wait. Just in Bakhmut. Now, the figure before that was 160,000, up to 160,000 total. But if this is just from Bakhmut,
110,000 soldiers killed in action over the past 4 months.
So what does that mean?
Just 4 months.
What does that mean for the last year, Ukrainian-wide statistics? What would that be? 200,000? This is incredible.
Well, I'm going to get into that, too. Okay. So just to let you know how many soldiers that is as many soldiers the United States had killed in action in 4 years of the Korean War and in 10 years of the Vietnam War combined. Okay, so that's 15 years of intense war that the United States was in to get that 4 months of casualties in Bakhmut. Okay, you have to remember what's going on in Ukraine is the extermination of white people.
And it's all run by Zionists, too. Remember that, friends. Right. This is all a Zionist white genocide. That's what's going on. Go ahead.
Okay, a new conservative estimate of Ukrainian losses put it at 400,000 killed in action. The United States lost that many soldiers in 5 years of World War II in all the theaters of the war. But these are killed in action figures from just 1 year of fighting. 1 year. It is an extermination that's going on over there. And what is happening, the United States is paying for white Ukrainians to go get slaughtered on the front lines. We've paid $120 billion to kill those white people. And it's happening. Finally, the United States spends money on something and they get their money's worth. Okay?
How putrid.
It's what they want. Okay? So the primary goal of an army is to destroy the enemy army. Russia is doing this. For them to storm Bakhmut and just take it would probably cost approximately 5 to 7 times more lives, Russian lives, than it's costing them now. So right now, they're taking the lives of the Ukrainians and the Ukrainian army, and they're doing that mostly through artillery and air power. Okay, so why not just let them sit there? The commander of the Ukrainian army wanted to pull the troops out of there, but Zelensky's, who has no military background whatsoever and has no idea what he's doing, he insists that they stay there and fight to the end for every inch of Ukrainian soil. So. It's the same thing that Hitler did to General von Paulus in Stalingrad. He wouldn't let them retreat, and they lost 600,000 German soldiers in Stalingrad. So this is Ukraine's Stalingrad, basically. You're looking at it now. It's projected that when this is over, when they've destroyed the Ukrainian army, it's pretty much over. It'll go quickly after that, because what's going to stand in the way if there's no army to stand in the way, right?
Well, they're talking about doing even more mobilization in Kiev and in the West, and mobilization means conscripts, draftees. That's what they're talking about. They need more bodies to throw into the meat grinder.
Right, and the people that are dying now are not trained or anything. They're just being thrown out there to get killed.
Kids and old men. I saw some pictures. You saw them. Yeah.
Yeah, so if you think about it, white people in the United States pay the most total taxes to the federal government, and that money is being used to kill white men on behalf of the satanic, gay, tranny, Jewish, Zelensky dictatorship in Ukraine. U.S. propaganda exaggerates Russian casualties and minimizes Ukrainian casualties because they don't want you to know what you are paying for. You are paying for white people to be exterminated. They also do not want you to know that you are next. Okay? So let me just compare Russian and U.S. military capabilities and effectiveness in a war that we both fought, Afghanistan. Now, I want to do this because when you listen to the media talk about what Ukraine is doing, and Ukraine is an American-trained army, okay, we've been over there training them since 2014. I've met people that have soldiers that have been over there training them and stuff, okay? Uh-huh. So we've been training them intensely for 8 years before this war started, okay? So we're going to compare the American Army in Afghanistan with the Soviet Army in Afghanistan, okay? So from 1979 to 1989, Soviet forces in Afghanistan lost 14,493 killed in action. They killed 2,180 Mujahideen and civilians. For every Soviet soldier killed, there were 150 Afghan deaths. This indicates that the Soviets were aggressive in combat. Aggressive combat is an indicator of good leadership. This was over a 10-year period. Okay, from 2001 till 2021, U.S. forces in Afghanistan lost 6,294 U.S. soldiers and contractors killed in action. They killed 98,436 Taliban and civilians. For every U.S. soldier and contractor killed, there were 15,000 Afghan deaths. And listen, for every American soldier killed, there were two contractors killed. Okay? So they did the match. This indicates that the U.S. were not at all aggressive in combat. This indicates extremely poor leadership. U.S. forces were, in fact, more concerned with force protection than they were trying to destroy enemy forces. There were 2,448 U.S. military KIA and 3,846 contractors killed in action. That means over 61% of the U.S. killed in actions were military contractors. They told us that the war on terrorism was a contractor's war, but why? Contractors are usually the most experienced and well-trained soldiers that left military service to get much better pay. This reflects on the poor quality of both training and poor leadership in the U.S. military. Keep in mind, this is true of all armies. The Wagner Group is made up of well-trained and experienced veterans. There is propaganda that Russia let men out of prison to go fight. We say this to imply that there is something wrong with that. During the Vietnam War, judges often waived going to jail if you would enlist in the military. They would also, if you got probation or parole, you could do your parole and probation in the U.S. Army or Marine Corps or something. Okay? We did the same thing, and all nations do the same thing. During the Battle of New Orleans in 1814, the U.S. commander, Andrew Jackson, enlisted the aid of the pirate Lafitte to assist in the defense of New Orleans. That would be like enlisting Al Capone to help us out in the war. Oops, we did that in World War II. We hired Lucky Luciano to help us get intelligence for the invasion of Italy. And that was substantial intelligence. It wasn't a light thing, okay? Whenever you see American hypocrisy in reports like this, you are seeing propaganda. You are being lied to. A lie of omission, if nothing else. Okay, a better metric for how well troops are trained is by comparing the effectiveness of the native troops that the nation trained for when they left. Okay, so this is the Soviets training an Afghan army versus the Americans training an Afghan army. Once again, let's compare the Soviets with the Americans in Afghanistan. During the 10 years in Afghanistan, the Soviets trained Afghan communist forces. The Soviets pulled out in February 1989. The army they trained and left behind held Afghanistan for over 3 years until April 1992. They did not get generous supplies or funds from the Soviets. They got barely anything, but they held out for 3 years. The Soviet-trained Communist Army of Afghanistan lasted 33 months after communism and Soviet control of the Eastern Europe happened and the Berlin Wall came down in August 1989. The Afghan communists were still in control 22 months after the USSR started falling apart. The Soviet-trained Afghan communists were still in control 13 months after the USSR was finally dissolved in March 1991. During this time, Afghanistan received little or no aid from anyone, yet their Soviet-trained army outlasted the Soviet Union itself by 13 months. This is an indicator of an effective training and leadership. So the United States and NATO trained the Afghan National Army was defeated before U.S. forces even left Afghanistan. The Afghan government fled before all U.S. forces were out. The Afghan National Army received ample logistics and funding from the USA and NATO, yet failed before we even left Afghanistan. The American experience in Afghanistan and how quickly it unraveled demonstrates that America and NATO training is extremely poor quality, and our leadership is abysmal. The USA was more interested in destroying traditional Afghan family culture by promoting feminism and pushing LGBT rights than they were in defeating the enemy forces. It's like putting all your money in diversion, equity, and inclusion instead of putting into learning how to actually defeat the enemy. So I was able to watch and compare video footage of Russian armor from their initial invasion a year ago until now. I was an armored cavalry captain, and I attended both the armored cavalry officer basic course and the armor officer advanced course at Fort Knox, Kentucky, as well as an excellent tank commander's course at Gallenfield, Idaho. I know armor. The improvement in Russian armor tactics is substantial. At first, Russian army did not seem flexible or adaptive. This is their armor in the beginning of the invasion a year ago. Okay. It is an axiom of war that no plan survives the first moments of combat. It looked to me like the armored forces had not practiced immediate action reaction drills because they did not immediately react to any changes on the battlefield. During training, you want to train your troops about what to do if they meet many different situations so they can just immediately react as opposed to try and figure it out when seconds count. In combat is not where you want the learning curve to be. You have to make your immediate reactions to be instinctive. You do this by practicing and training. As Red Army Marshal Tukhachevsky said, training hard, battle easy. When I watch footage of the Russian armor at present just a few days ago, they are aggressive, they use massive violence and force, and you can see them react instantly to change situations. This past year of training is telling. The tactical and technical proficiency of the leadership and troops in the Russian Army is 1,000 times improvement over a year ago. Okay, so a year ago, they were basically fundamentally zero, and now they're at 100%, okay? So they're doing good. I can tell by just looking at them, okay? So now, whenever you hear American officials give an opinion about the strength or ability of the Russian forces, keep in mind that they, in fact, do not know what they are talking about. They are merely telling you what the woke dictatorship wants you to believe. They are delusional. To continue, once the Russians complete the consolidation of military control over Luhansk, Donetsk, Zaporizhia, and Kherson, their next goal is to protect the Russian homeland against the longer-range weapons that NATO is shipping them. They intend to expand all the way to the Dnieper River and to head west to take Mykolaiv and Odessa provinces. This thrust west is to protect the Russians in Transnistria. This is becoming critical, okay? You see, the Ukrainians have been massing troops on the Ukrainian border with Moldova across from Russian positions. Ukraine has massed 3 divisions there. Previously, Moldovan Prime Minister Maia Sandu was trying to bring Moldova into the war on NATO's side. The Moldovans ousted her because they want to stay neutral, okay?
Right. Right.
Now, why are the Ukrainians massing 3 divisions across Transnistria? Because if they go across the border, Ukraine is officially invading Moldova, a sovereign nation. Well, the reason why is this. Go back to when the Warsaw Pact was breaking up in 1989 and stuff. Well, the Russians had a lot of forward-deployed ammunition and logistics and stuff. Well, when it all fell down, all that went to in Transnistria, there's a giant depot. It's a a military depot, okay? All that ammunition, all those shells, all that stuff went there to Transnistria, and there it sits today. There's enough ammunition in Transnistria to supply the Ukrainian army for a year with ammunition.
Okay, this is Transnistria.
Yes.
Transnistria.
Right.
And they got enough ammo there in Transnistria for a year?
For a year. They can supply an army group, and that's basically four armies. They can supply them for a year with the ammo there.
And this all old Soviet stuff, basically.
Yeah, it's Soviet stuff. It's like AK-70, 47 rounds, 51 caliber rounds,
7.62,
stuff like
what
that.
What is it? Yeah. Okay.
39.
That's wild. All this is in Transnistria. No wonder the Transnistria deal is on the front burner. Okay, I get it.
Yeah, so that's what that's all about. But the reality is Russia is not stupid. They only have 1,500 troops in Transnistria. So if Ukrainians attack them, they can go in and they can take the place over. But I'll tell you right now, the Russians are not stupid. They have it wired with bombs already. That place will blow. The Ukrainians will not get one single round of ammunition from there. So,
well, hypersonic missiles, they've probably got a couple dozen of them targeted on the place.
Oh, yeah, they could do that, too. But they've got troops there. They'll just wire it up and blow it up. Just blow it all, you know.
Wow. So this is what Transnistria is all about. I had no idea. Thank you. Now it makes sense. Okay, here's an update I just got from Mike. Thank you, Mike. It's from War News 24/7. Massacre in Bakhmut. Russians have set up a no-escape zone. Wherever Ukrainians flee, they get nailed. They got their artillery. It's just zeroed in all over the place. Over 500 dead already trying to escape, apparently. Ukrainian convoys bombed. Russians liberated 50% of the town now. It's completely devoid of Ukrainian military. This is, and I don't know how many they sent in to, it's hard to know how many troops are in there. We don't know. I've seen estimates up to 25,000 were sent in at Zionist Zelensky's. He doesn't want to lose. These people are so creepy. Nothing as a strategic withdrawal will suit any of them. So they're going to sacrifice these men.
Of course they are. They don't care about them.
No.
We don't care about them either, apparently. So, you know, we're just going to let them die.
Yeah.
So this is truly going to be a world war. Let me cover some other areas, some points that will do it. So in Serbia, the bullying that the U.S., EU, and NATO are heaping on Syria is out of control. They make demands that Serbia could never agree to. This is a theater of the war the press likes to ignore. You see, the USA and NATO invaded Serbia and bombed it to take Kosovo away from Serbia. You see, Serbia is still regarded by the United Nations as being, Kosovo, as being an integral part of Serbia. The U.S. and NATO had no mandate from the U.N. to invade or intervene in Serbia. Basically, what we did in Serbia is what Russia is doing in Ukraine. Exactly the same thing.
Uh-huh.
To cover their sin of an illegal and unsanctioned invasion of a sovereign nation against international law, NATO and EU are bullying Serbia to sign away the sovereignty of Kosovo. Serbia has amassed military logistics to fight a war for Kosovo. This war could break out in any time. It will probably break out when Russia goes formally to war with NATO. Because they can't fight NATO by themselves. They have to do it as part of something else.
Mm-hmm.
So Greece and Cyprus. Turkey has always been an enemy of Greece. Turkey has control of about one-third of Cyprus also. This past year, Turkey has become upset about Greece not respecting the boundaries of Turkey in the Aegean Sea. In other words, the situation is sort of like this. Like, say that America is... 10 miles away from Russia. Actually, we're only a quarter mile away from Russia, but say we're 10 miles away from Russia, then 5 miles out would be our sea territory, and then they would get 5 miles of the sea territory. So it's 12 miles, but when you have two land masses close to each other, you just split the difference of the area between them. Well, Greece is trying to say, basically, doing to China, they're trying to say that the Aegean Sea goes up to the Turkish coast, and that's Greek territory. Well, that doesn't wash with the Turks, of course. So that is ready to go to open conflict any time. Greece even built a big wall against Turkey.
Yeah.
Big fence and fortified it and stuff. So these are things you don't hear daily in the news and stuff. You know, they never talk about those things because it's not sexy, whatever. So in the Middle East, Israel has been putting on a diplomatic blitz to make attacking Iranian nuclear sites as acceptable. However, because of Ukrainian bombing of the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant and the totally biased nature of the woke UN, instead of condemning Ukraine, they want to make the bombing of any nuclear site anywhere as being a war crime. This makes it difficult for Israel to attack just nuclear sites in Iran. But Israel will ignore the UN, as it has always done. The Sunni Arab states will try and sit this out, hoping that the Shia Arab states, Shia Iran and Israel, are all weakened or destroyed. They can no longer depend on a very hostile United States for their defense because they are unwilling to be preached to by an entirely immoral and reprobate United States. We will likely see Ukraine, Azerbaijan, and Israel at war with Russia, Iran, Turkey, Armenia, Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon. The United Kingdom has military bases in Cyprus that would side with Cyprus against Turkey, but the British Army is completely combat ineffective. They have no army to fight with. Okay. So, actually, I tried to get an honest and realistic assessment of the U.S. Army, and the best we can do is, this is the U.S. Army, the best we can do is 5 combat divisions that are anywhere near being combat capable. That means that the USA has an effective army of only 50,000 troops. We cannot win a war against a developed nation with that army. Hell, we could not even win a war against the poorest and most illiterate people on earth in Afghanistan with our army. Okay. This war could go nuclear. Okay. So it's just, Israel's really pushing for this right now, and they're really making a lot of trouble over there. So this is something that they want to do. Okay, so let's go to the South Asian theater. So Russian made fuel deals with Iran, Afghanistan, India, and China, but Pakistan was left out. After the United States overthrew President Imran Khan last year, Pakistan began shipping weapons to Ukraine. We've tried to overthrow the Modi. Victoria Nuland traveled to India to overthrow the Modi government so we could get India sending guns to Ukraine. But India's having none of that. They're a traditional friend of Russia. So Pakistan is selling arms, not giving them to Ukraine, but they've been making lots of money. The United States is paying the Pakistanis for the weapons. Russia decided that Pakistan was not a friendly nation, but this suits India, Russia's longtime friend, because it tightens the India-Russia friendship. In this war, India will try to be neutral. At the G20 foreign ministers meeting in New Delhi last week, Indian Foreign Minister Jaishankar replied to woke NATO ministers complaining that India had not taken a stand on Ukraine. And what he said, I'll quote what he said. He said, "We do stand for something. What I do not like is to be defined as is standing against something or somebody, because that diminishes me. That makes it out as though some other people are the center of the world and I am only there to be for them or against them." That's the official policy of India. They are not going to take orders from us. Germany's Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock did not get a red carpet or official reception party upon her arrival in New Delhi like the other ministers did. India is not impressed with the woke German minister who ignorantly said that Russia must change their position 360 degrees if they want peace. Well, she meant 180 degrees. Has 360 degrees change is going back to where you are now. As a matter of fact, the Russian foreign minister called her the connoisseur of geometry, okay, because she didn't know what she was talking about. So the first world used to look down at the third world as ignorant and uninformed. Now third world leaders look at first world leaders as delusional idiots. If China leaves India alone, India could become a major world power after a nuclear war. Russia wants to stay close to India because after World War III, China is likely to invade Siberia, and India is Russia's most valuable ally against China. However, India does not threaten China, and China knows it. So they can sit out. China can just leave them alone. However, it is possible that Pakistan and India goes to war, and that would be a nuclear war because both China, both India and Pakistan are nuclear powers. Okay, so in East Asia, North Korea warned the USA that if they held the enhanced military exercises with the South Korean armies, that that would be crossing a major red line and could lead to World War III. You'll notice that the term red line is being bandied about a lot nowadays. This will force some belligerent at some point to act on a violation of a red line just to give the phrase meaning. Yes, this can cause World War III. Too many red lines have already been crossed. North Korea can start a nuclear war on their own. The past week, the German President Olaf Scholz told China if they give weapons to Russia, they would be crossing a red line. China looked upon him with contempt as they look at it like Germany once colonized China with the colonies of Tsingtao and Kaohsiung in the early 20th century. China will not stand for any kowtowing to any European power or to the United States. China, Russia, and North Korea will be fighting the USA, South Korea, Japan, Taiwan, Philippines, Australia, and New Zealand. NATO has also pledged to join this war on the USA side. And talking about bad armies, the German army is hopelessly combat ineffective. They cannot mount a defense of their own country at this point. So they spent the last 5 years getting rid of white supremacists in their ranks. And, well, of course, most German soldiers would be whites, and if you're white, you're a white supremacist. So they basically cleaned their military out of anybody that has a will to fight, okay? So in all everything that's going on, Russia, you have to pay attention to the fact that this is a total war. I mean, it's not total war right at the moment, but that's what it's going to shake out to be. Okay, but Russia's fighting this war on multiple fronts, and one of those fronts is economic fronts. And on the economic front, guess who's doing better? China and Russia are doing better economically right now. The West and America, even Japan, Australia, their economies are diving. Okay. So, and India's economy is doing okay, too. Anybody who sanctions Russia is not doing well. Okay, basically. So they're winning on that front, plus the fact that this is another reason, okay, and this is straight from Russia, okay, another reason why they're not just going out there and running into the country and just taking it over with shock and awe, you know, multiple bombardments and massive troops just sweeping over the steppes and headed towards the NATO border. Well, they don't do it because, see, they have Africa, Latin America, and most of Asia is in Russia's corner right now. And they have to think, like, what are the optics on this? What is it going to look like? They do not want to alienate any of the people that are not necessarily supporting them, but the people who are not against them. Because Latin America, Africa, is not against them. And three-quarters of Asia is not against them either. Okay, so they're mostly live and let live with Russia. So they want to keep it that way. Unlike World War II, the United States managed to get basically the whole world to fight Germany, Italy, and Japan. Okay, and they're not doing that now. This world war is not lining up there. Not everybody is behind the United States this time. As a matter of fact, only Europe, Japan, South Korea, Australia, New Zealand, Taiwan, Philippines, those are the only countries that are behind the United States in this conflict going up. So you might say most of the people in the world and most of the assets in the world are not on America's side, okay? So predictions from inside, this is from both inside Ukraine and in Russia, I'm kind of trying to get a feel of what they think is going to go on, and if they think that this is going to turn into a nuclear war. And here's what they said you have to watch for. Is pretty soon the destruction of the Ukrainian army is going to meet critical mass, okay? It'll be a point where they cannot function anymore, and then Russia can just sweep over Ukraine, okay? Now, when they do this, if they did this way, it would not cost very many lives, few civilian lives. I mean, this is a thing of war. If you punch hard and you punch fast, there's less people who get killed, okay? It's when you have a stagnant war that people get killed, like what's going on the front right now. But that's what Russia wants to do. They want to destroy the Russian the Ukrainian army on the front lines, okay? It's like, just let them mass there and just blow them up. And then when they get ready to lash out and go to the Dnieper River, well, they're not going to meet that much resistance. And that's kind of what they're banking on. Now, the thing that was a threat from NATO was NATO, they were thinking, well, if Ukraine starts to lose, we will flood NATO troops into Ukraine. The concept being that we won't bomb or attack Russia. We'll just send a bunch of troops into Ukraine, not to attack Russian troops, but to just sit in that area and make the Russians say, well, we can't attack them because they're NATO troops. This is very risky, okay? Because the first American that shoots a Russian, it's on, okay? It is on. So that is not going to work. That will lead to nuclear war, okay? So if I don't think there's much we can do now in the way of sending supplies to help Ukraine. Every dime we send to them now is a dime wasted. Okay. It's not going to help them win in any way, shape, or form. But, of course, Zelensky gets up there because, well, he's a scam artist, and what he's doing is he's getting money. And to get money, he tells people, oh, we won't give up Bakhmut, and oh, we'll take Crimea back. Well, any seasoned military strategist would tell you that there's no way that Ukraine can take Crimea. As a matter of fact, right now, the consensus of professional, these are not political military analysts, but professional military analysts, would be that Ukraine cannot win. They're not going to win. Okay, Russia will prevail. So what really matters is how much, I mean, NATO has said, well, we can't lose Ukraine. Well, if NATO insists on not losing Ukraine, World War III is going to happen. Nuclear war will happen if they insist on backing Ukraine up no matter what. Then it's over. Okay, so right now it's kind of hard to tell which way to go. Anything can set this war off at any time. Okay, that can happen because see the Russians are also kind of worried that we might hit them first. Like if they start winning, they're concerned that we may nuke them first. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so they're cutting it very close. They want to make their advances, but they really don't want a nuclear war. And what they really don't want is they don't want America shooting first, because whoever fires first in a nuclear war is the winner. Okay, when you hear the American news media and politicians say there's no winner in nuclear war, I can assure you that that is not true at all. You can win a nuclear war. If you do what Russia does, you can win a nuclear war. If you do what America does, you cannot win a nuclear war.
No,
okay, so the only hope America has of winning a nuclear war is if we shoot first. And Russia is concerned that that might happen. So this is...
Well, I think they should be, and you've got false flag opportunities all over the place. So they can blame Russia all day and all night. No problem.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. So, you know, I've noticed another thing, too, Jeff, is I've noticed that the American pro-Ukrainian propaganda is picking up, and it is absurd. They are just slamming people. The entire brigades of Russians being wiped out and stuff, you know. I mean, it's just absurd.
Well, I've never seen anything like it. It's nothing laughable about war and death, but it is laughable, this crap they're spewing. I've never seen anything more obviously one-sided, corrupt. It's not real. It's all lies. They're describing an entirely different war.
I've also seen people that say, well, you know, all of our other wars were very different because we had journalists on the ground reporting on the war. Well, there's a complete news blackout on Ukraine. The only information we got of Ukraine is what Zelensky says, period. There is nothing else.
Zelensky and his Zionist handlers. Yeah.
Right. In other words, like even American journalists over there, his news report has to be approved by Zelensky. As you know, CBS kowtows to Zelensky. Zelensky has more power over our press than any American or any wealthy person has. They have total power.
Think about that, everybody.
Press.
Think closely about that. Mitch is correct. This is absolutely correct. It's incredible what's going on here. Truly.
Oh, yeah. He's just making it up. I mean, you know, we have to think about the quality of the people that we have as leaders. If John Kirby and Jake Sullivan can get up there and with a straight face say we did not blow up the Nord Stream pipeline, bullshit. They are lying to our face. They think we are so stupid that we would believe their lies. You know.
Yeah.
They really do. It's like Biden and Nuland both said they were going to blow up the pipeline if Russia invaded Ukraine. The pipeline gets blown up. I don't know. The first rule of being a criminal is don't tell the police that you're going to do the crime. You know, don't let them know ahead of time you're going to do it. It's sort of foolish, you know. So then later they will act like, oh, we don't know anything about it. No, that pipeline is deep under sea. You know, you need quality equipment and quality troops to set those charges. That takes skill and assets that other countries do not have. But America has it. We have it, you know.
Yeah.
And right now, the people of Europe are paying extremely high prices for electricity and fuel, heating stuff, because now they have to buy
Europeans.
It from America.
Right.
They're buying their oil from us. So, you know, the self-interest involved was pretty big and pretty obvious. And once again, I need to remind everybody that this is Joe Biden, Mr. Green New Energy Deal and stuff, okay? This is an environmental president, the climate change president, the Save the Planet president. He ordered people to put out, I think it was 957 million cubic meters of methane into our atmosphere. Now, I figured this out. If you take the whole land area of the United States, including Alaska, and you put it in 12 feet deep of methane, that's how much methane that is. That would cover the entire surface of America, including Alaska, the territories and stuff, 12 feet deep in methane. That's what Joe Biden released into the atmosphere. But he wants you to quit using carbon to run your car. He wants you to quit using propane to cook. He wants you to just go within 15 minutes of your home so that you don't use fuel. He wants you to do all this. He wants you to pay exorbitant prices for gasoline and for heating fuel, for electricity, which is made mostly from carbon-based burning and stuff. He wants you to pay more for all that, but then he goes and releases all that into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And listen, if you take methane and you catch it on fire, it produces carbon dioxide. Okay, methane is 10 times more of a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide is. If all that methane had been burned for fuel, okay, it would be 10 times less greenhouse gases, but that they let it go up into the air as it was, that was 10 times more greenhouse gas than if they had burned it. Okay. So this is your leaders, people. You know, you know climate change is bullshit because they have no problem polluting the air with this stuff. Just look at Palestine, East Palestine, Ohio. Look at that big cloud they let that just burn there. I mean, it's insane.
No, they blew holes in the tanker cars, which fell over after they derailed and did not leak. They didn't get their leak. They figured the cars would rupture and spill out all the vinyl chloride. It didn't. So they had to put shaped charges on each of the cars, blow holes in them, so all the liquid could run out into that big ditch that just happened to be there, and then they threw road flares in there to ignite it. It was all done. It was a terrorist attack against America. Thousands are going to end up dying early from this. There's no question about that.
Let me tell you, there's this gas in World War One called phosgene gas.
That's what the precursor is, vinyl chloride. Yes.
Phosgene gas killed 85% of all casualties from chemical warfare was phosgene alone. Okay. And how do you make phosgene gas? Well, let me tell you, it's so simple it's not funny. If you take any organic substance and you attach a chlorine to it, like vinyl chloride, and you burn it, that produces phosgene gas and hydrogen chloride. So it makes chlorine gas plus phosgene gas. Okay. And that's what they unleashed on America, was all this phosgene gas. It's like that was entirely... It's not just stupid and negligent. It's criminal what they did. That was criminal what they did. Of course, nobody will ever be punished for it, but it was criminal. It's like, well, to give some perspective to people, like your refrigerator, it works off of CFCs, which are hydrocarbons plus a chlorinated hydrocarbon. Okay. Here in my town, a fire lieutenant went into a house that was burning, and the refrigerator was on fire, and he inhaled the gas from the refrigerator. That was phosgene gas, because chlorinated hydrocarbons, when you burn it, it makes phosgene. What phosgene does, we in the Army, we call it dry land drowning, because what it does is phosgene, when you inhale it, you know, you have this little membrane where air can pass into your blood and carbon dioxide can pass out, okay? Mm-hmm. It's just a very thin membrane. Well, phosgene eats that away. So what happens is your lungs fill with fluids and blood and stuff. Your body fluids just fill your lungs up. You drown.
Basically.
You drown on your own body fluids. So this is what they put off over there. I mean, the people in charge of this country do not mean you well. They want you to hurt. They want you to be messed up. They do not have your interest. I mean, listen, they insisted we all take this shot that's just killing people left and right, okay? So where does it stop? Can you trust the government of the United States about anything? Will they ever tell you the truth about anything? No, they will not. Will they ever put you first and be concerned with you? No. Will they be concerned with your liberty and your freedom? No. The only thing they want from you is obedience. That's it. That is their end game.
I remember the way that this whole bioweapon kills people is absolutely horrific.
It's
a multifaceted pathway of death, and each pathway is horrible. This is not something that is humane. I mean, there are humane ways to kill people, but this is not it. This is designed to make people suffer and go through agony. That's all.
Oh, yes. And you know what? It's also, with each booster that you get, you're getting closer to getting killed. Okay. The boosters were very important in this and stuff. So I know some people that got the first shot, just maybe one shot, and then didn't get any more. And they're kind of doing okay, all right now. But I don't think this is meant to kill people all at once. It's not like taking a shot of cyanide. It's like taking a shot of something that is a ticking time bomb that sometime in the future it'll bang, get you, you know, and stuff. So,
yeah, very good. All right, Mitch, excellent report as always. On a very, very difficult situation. It does look like all the troops in Bakhmut are either going to surrender, and that's probably not going to happen, or they're going to die. There's just no way around it. None. Okay, well, we'll know more next time we talk. So to you.
Well, keep in mind that Putin isn't saying anything about them not pulling out of Bakhmut, because that would be the wise decision. But like I said, Napoleon said, never interrupt an enemy when he's making a mistake.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Good line. Okay. Next week, you'll be on Monday.
Okay.
Not Tuesday. Just write that down.
Okay. I will.
Talk to you then, Mitch.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Mitchell Henderson, and as good of military analysis and intel as you're going to get. All right, we'll be back tomorrow night on Tuesday already. Take care. Talk soon.